Hey, morning. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Zayin in Baba Basra. We're starting today in Kuf Mem Vav Amud Beis, towards the top of the Amud, right before the Mishnah. We have one little sugya to do before the Mishnah. As a recap of what we saw yesterday, we talked about Sivlonas, gifts that are given from the Arus to the Arusa. They went through the first stage of marriage, Kiddushin. He has given her his Kesef Kiddushin, and on top of that, he also has given her gifts. And the Mishnah went on to describe that certain gifts are refundable and certain gifts are not refundable. If they don't go through with the second stage of marriage of Nisuin, so there is an opportunity for him to receive back the gifts that he received. And basically what we highlighted yesterday is that we made a very basic distinction between perishables and non-perishables. And non-perishables, gold, silver, clothing, so that's returnable. In other words, that was basically given on condition that they were going to get married, they're going to go through the second stage of marriage, and they didn't, so therefore they're refundable. Perishables, on the other hand, are not refundable. That is, of course, that he goes over there and eats together with his in-laws. And with that state of the Gemara, now is going to arrive at a conclusion of all this. We are starting in the Gemara at the very top of the Amud. Sivlonos Moatun Shinishamish Behem Bebeis Avia. Yosef Ravin Savakamad Derav Papav Yosef Ikamar. So Ravin says over the following. Bein Shemaisa He, Bein Shemaisa Hu, Hadar Hu. So whether she died or whether he died, it's going to be returned. Bein Shemaisa Hu, Hadar Hu. Whether he dies, whether she dies, or whether he retracts. Sivlonos Hadre. Machlo Mishlo Lo Hadar. So in terms of the non-perishables, so that is going to be returned. However, machal mishta, but the food and the drink is not going to be returned. Hadraba, however, if she retracts, meaning she's the one who says that she no longer was interested in the marriage, so she doesn't want to go through the second stage of the marriage, and so therefore a get's going to be required. So hadra ba ihi hadra afilu kisha diarka. So then, what gets returned? Everything gets returned. Meaning, all everything gets returned, even perishables get returned, and even the Gemara says even the yarek, even the vegetables. I'm Rav Huna Breder of Yeshua v'shamel lehem demei basa bezol. What if meat is given over? So the meat has to be returned. In terms of the returning of meat, so the Gemara says that it's done at a reduction. Basically how much meat can be bought on the cheap. And the Gemara says that Kama Bazal Tilsa, throughout Chas we find this. Rashi quotes a couple places where we find this. If you want to find cheap meat, so you can basically get a 1/3 discount to find it cheap. So therefore, in a situation of refunding of meat, so it's going to be at this discount of 1/3 of what it's of what its original price is. Okay. And that's the Gemara's conclusion regarding Sivlonos. Now, the next sugya, which is really basically the beginning of today's daf, is the topic of Shechiv Meirah. It sounds like an incredibly strange transition to go from the topic of Sivlonos to the topic of Shechiv Meirah. But the truth of the matter is that if you follow along this line of thinking, it actually makes perfect sense how the Gemara is transitioning from point A to point B. What Sivlonos? Sivlonos basically is that I'm giving you a gift on condition. That's what it is. In other words, they have now entered in the stage of Erison, the first stage of marriage, and now he's going to be giving her gifts and refundable in the event that we don't go through the second stage of marriage. Again, with some details, what is and what isn't refundable. But the basic idea is that I'm giving you something on condition. And if the condition is not fulfilled, so it's going to go back to me. Shchiv Meirah, which is now our big topic of discussion for today's daf, is basically the same idea. Again, obviously a totally different context, but it's basically the same idea. A man is dying, and a man now, realizing that he's dying, wants to assign his property to different people, assign his estate to different people. So the understanding now is that he's giving away all of his assets and all of his estates because he's dying. And what if he makes a miraculous recovery, and what if he doesn't die? So then gifts don't go through. In other words, the gifts obviously were on the condition. They were clearly intent on him giving it away because he's dying. And if he's not going to die, so then he's not giving the gifts. And so it's the same basic idea that it's a conditional gift. The condition is not articulated, but nevertheless, it's understood this is part and parcel of what the gift giving is all about. That's the idea behind Shechiv Meirah. And with that in mind, let's begin. Shechiv Meirah shekatzu kol nechasov la'acherim. So the Shechiv Meirah is writing all his possessions to others. Now the word writing over here, the Rashi says, don't take it so literally. In other words, nothing has to be written per se. In other words, verbal instruction is all you need. And we're going to keep pounding this point again and again throughout our discussion, that it's a Chiddush HaTorah. And when I say Chiddush HaTorah, it may be that this is an idea min HaTorah, this may be an idea min HaRabbanan, that's going to come up later in today's daf. but it's a Chiddush HaTorah in which all you need is his verbal instruction, and that's sufficient. Normally, when you're assigning property to somebody else, it's a transaction. You need formality. You need kinyanim. When it comes to the Shechiv Merah, you don't need any particular kinyan. That's the Chiddush regarding Shechiv Merah, and that, the Mishnah says, is what is novel over here. So Shechiv Merah, I'm reading the Mishnah again. Shechiv Merah, Shekasav Kol Nechasav La'achem, V'shir Karka Koshehu. Now, let's say he doesn't give away all of his property, but let's say he gives away most of his property, but he retains some of it for himself. So the Gemara says, so now, basically, what are we saying? We're saying that this is not conditional. Meaning, if he really thought he was dying, and if he was giving it away because he thought he was dying, so he'd be giving away everything. By virtue of the fact that he's retaining some of it for himself, so that seems to be an indication that he would have done it in any event, whether he was sick or whether he was healthy. And so therefore, matanas or kayemis, the matana is going to sustain, it's going to be a valid kinyan, even if he recovers. Lo shir karka koshehu, however, if he leaves nothing for himself, and he gives everything away, ein matanas or kayemis, so in the event of a full recovery from his Shechiv Merah, so then everything is voided, all transactions are voided because of the implicit condition that I'm only giving it away because I'm dying. Okay, so basically we have together now the basic construct of a Shechiv Merah.
You're saying he's dying, he's not dying. You're saying that the fact that he's retaining something for himself tells you that he's really not dying.
Or,
and it's gifting.
Right, correct.
How could it be a Matan Shekinat Merah if you're saying that?
Oh, okay. Excellent. Excellent point. So so let's take a look together at the Rashbam in the Mishnah. And the Rashbam in the Mishnah is really going to fill out a lot of the details regarding these ideas. Okay, this Rashbam is really important. It just basically catalogs for us all the details and the rules and exceptions regarding a Shechiv Merah. The Rashbam lo shari kol shehu ein matanas matana im amar chozer afilu kana miyado. So in other words, if he gave away everything and he recovers, so then even with a kinyan, still nevertheless it's going to bounce back to him. Shenir and advarim shemachmas misa nasan, because again the evidence seems to indicate that he's doing it because he's dying. The amanashim lo yamos lo yitzkan matanu midelo sharmidi amrinan lava daita da hachi yahiv leishim yamo michal yo yamos barav yitzarach lebrios. In other words, if by giving everything away and he were to make a recovery, so then what he'd be left with? He'd be left with nothing. He'd have to be knocking door to door, and clearly that's not what his intent was. His intent was, I'm only giving everything away because I don't think I need them anymore. But once there's a need for them, so then it goes back to him. Aval imeis mi amatanas amatano bein shir bein lo shir kedemuchach big Gemara. Now, if he does die, however, obviously the gifts are going to be a valid gift, as the Gemara itself is going to say. And we'll see that later in the Gemara, not today's daf, but later. Now, if he didn't make an actual kinyan, but he made a verbal declaration, so that in of itself is going to work, provided that he doesn't leave anything, doesn't withhold anything back. Now, a Shechiv Merah gets this benefit of being able to assign all of his properties to other people, even if he doesn't mention the word death. Meaning, we are going to assume that the condition, the context in which he's in, is going to be enough grounds for this kinyan to work. Now, but let's say that he is saying, this is my last will and testament. Meaning, he's actually mentioning that I am assigning all this because I'm going to die. That's what's called mitzava machmas misa. Afilu shir karka kol shuv v'kana minei ein matanas matana ela im amad chozer kidebaskin lakaman v'gemara kudepricious. We're going to see later in the Gemara as well that if he mentions that he's gifting this away because he's dying, and even if he doesn't give everything away, there, because he mentions death now becomes an important condition in the gifting. And if he doesn't die, so then all the gifting is going to be retracted to him. And this is true even if he didn't give everything away. So again, you got to take everything into consideration regarding the validity of such an act. It depends on whether he's a Shechiv Merah, whether he retains some of it for himself or not, whether or not he mentions death or he does not mention death. So there's another number of considerations to take in effect. Okay, now, Again, our Mishnah basically taught us the idea that a person who's dying, and it's clear that he's dying, and he's a Shechimera, so just by virtue of the fact that he is assigning his properties to other people, so that means now that the assignment by itself works, you don't need a formal kinyan, and if he recovers, so it's all going to go back to him. Okay, that's the basic idea behind Shechid Merah. This is what's called in Halach an Umdana, meaning we didn't say all this, but there are certain assumptions that we're making. And based on the assumptions that we're making, so therefore, the halacha is going to result based on the assumptions. So the Gemara says, the Gemara starts off with the first discussion of this morning on the sugya, man tana de azlin and basar umdana. Yeah, and who subscribes to this idea? This idea of umdana, that circumstantial evidence is going to be enough in order to determine what his intention was. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, he did Tanya. So we're going to have two Tanayim who are both going to subscribe to this idea of Umdana in two different contexts. And Rav Nachman puts up, Rav Nachman's an Amora, obviously, he puts up Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh as his Tana who subscribes to this basic idea. D'Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. Harish Alech beno l'medina seyam v'sham v'shameis, beno. V'amal v'kasa kol nechasa v'l'acher. His only son goes away on a journey, and he hears rumors now that his son died. Tragic. And then what he does is he assigns all of his estate to somebody else because he wants to take care of his estate. And then v'achakach babino. And then the son comes back. So rumors of his death were obviously fake news. And matanasa matana. So the gift that he gave is going to be a good gift, despite the fact that seemingly he only gifted it away to other people because he thought his son was dead. But according to the Tanakhama, okay, but that's all conjecture. We don't know that. And he did gift it away properly to somebody else, so therefore, the gifting it stands. And Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, Ein Matanasa Matana, Sheol Malai Haya Yodeh, Shebeno Kayim Lo Haya Kotzvan. And Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh says, no, Umdana. Meaning, it's not that hard to figure out. He only gave his property away to other people because he thought his son was dead. But now that his son is alive, so of course he would have retracted had he known this, and he would never have gifted. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, we follow the umdana, we follow the what seems to be the reasonable conclusion of what his intention was, and that's where the money's going to go. The money's going to stay with the son, and not going to go to the third party that he gifted it to. So, what Rav Nachman now is arguing, it seems to be a very good argument, is that the whole construct of Shechid Merah, where we're thinking about what he's thinking, and we are therefore assuming that he's only gifting it because he's dying. But if he doesn't die, he's going to keep it for himself. That whole idea of umdana is also modeled after the same principles of Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. That's Tana number one. Rav Sheish is Amar Rav Shimon Shazuri, he, the Tanya. Rav Sheish says, I'll give you another Tana that subscribes to this idea of Umdana, and that's based on the following Brisa. Now, just in order to understand the following Brisa, it's actually a Mishnah in Gittin, to understand the following Mishnah, so you just need to know one thing. If a person is instructing somebody to write a get for his wife, he has to say two important words. He has to say kisvu utanu. In other words, his authorization of somebody writing a get for his wife, he has to say both write it and give it. Those two words are important. Those two verbs are necessary. If he misses one of those two verbs, if he just says kisvu, he doesn't say the word tanu or vice versa, so it's not going to be good. Meaning that authorization of the writing of that get is not going to be good. He has to say both kisvu utanu. So brishona you omer mayosu bekol avamer kisvu get lishi haray elu yichtivu v'yinu. A person is taken away in chains and he's about to be executed. And he says, write a get for my wife, but he doesn't say the word tenu. Give it to my wife. So over here, you understand that right now he's under high pressure. It's incredibly stressful. And you understand that that's of course what he meant, and he could be forgiven for the fact that he did not say both kisvu and tenu. The stress of the event just basically took too much of his energy. And so we will say that even though he only said the word kisvu, that's going to be sufficient. They included and somebody going away on a caravan, meaning someone going on a long, arduous journey, dangerous, and the guy says right before he goes, he says, you know what, I don't want my wife to be naguna, write again. So, and he only says the word kisvu and he did not say the word tenu. So once again, it's the same basic idea that It was a lot of pressure. It's right before he gets on the plane, or in this case, the caravan. And so therefore, understandable, excusable, that he did not say the word tanu. And Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer Afa Mesukan. And Rabbi Shimon Shazuri says, you know, if somebody is dying, and he's close to death, and now he does not want his wife to be a widow, he'd rather be a divorcee. And again, this prevents a lot of yibum issues. So he says kisvu, he says write a get for my wife. He did not say the word tenu. So once again, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri says, but here's what he meant. It's what he meant. Meaning, and again, the pressure of he's dying. There's a lot of energy being sapped out of him, and the stress, and you understand why he did not say the words kisvu utenu. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon Shazuri again has this basic idea that when a person's dying, so we will make certain assumptions about what his intent was, even though he didn't say everything that he didn't not clarify all of his intention. So what do we have right now? We have two Marayim putting up two different Tanayim in terms of this idea of Umdana, that we will make certain assumptions about what the person is thinking, even though he did not expressly state his thoughts. Now, Rav Nachman, my time, Allah makam laka, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri. So the Gemara just wonders now why each Amara didn't like the other Amara's Tana to use as a model, as a base model for this discussion. So why didn't Rav Nachman like or apply Rabbi Shimon Shazuri to our case over here? So the Gemara says, Shani Asam Damar Kitzvu. So the Gemara says, yeah, because, you know, in this case, you don't have to be a mind reader that he wanted to give his wife a get. In other words, he said the word kisvu. He said write the get. He just failed to say the word tenu. But over here, we're not mind reading. We know that he wants to give his wife a get. He said the word kisvu. Over here, however, think about what we're doing in terms of mind reading. He's assigning his property away to other people. We are now interpreting that that's only because he's dying. And if he recovers, so then he's going to rescind the gift. That's a lot of mind reading. He didn't say any of that. So the Gemara says, so that's why Rav Nachman will not use Rav Shimon Shazuri as a base model, because in the case of Rav Shimon Shazuri, he's clearly indicating that he wants to give his wife a get. Rav Sheshes, my time, Allah mokum like Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, other way around. Why didn't Rav Sheshes like the Tana, Rabbi Shimon Manasseh, to use as a model for our discussion? So Umdana Demuchach Shani. The Gemara says that it's an umda demuchach because in the case of Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, it is so self-evident. Meaning, he's gifting away all of his properties after hearing that his son has died, so clearly he's doing it because he thought his son was dead. In other words, the circumstances are so clear, and so, it's almost like self-evident that this is what his intention was, and you don't have to be nothing close to a rocket scientist in order to figure out what he's thinking. But the Shechiv Meira, however, we got to dig a little bit deeper in terms of understanding what his thought was, and assuming that he was only gifting everything away because he was dying, which, and the condition is that if he doesn't die, so it's going to go back to him. So the Gemara says that's not as clear cut. The Gemara now quotes a following brisa. Person's dying, and they ask him the question, "Who's your property going to go to?" And he says, "I thought I had a son. I'm not really sure what the subplot is over here, but okay. But let's just go with the statement. I thought I had a son, but now that I don't have a son, so I'm going to give it to so and so." Or Hayachol Amuta B'mita V'Amr Lo Nechazav L'Mit. Gemara gives a second example, very similar to the first. He's dying. They ask him the question, "Who is your assets going to go to?" Amr Lam Domish Ishti Mu'Beres. I thought my wife was pregnant. Achshav Shein Ishti Mu'Beres Nechazav L'Ploni. But now that I know that she's not pregnant, so therefore I'm assigning it to so and so. V'Nodesh Yesh Lo Benosh Haitz Ishti Mu'Beres. Now in both cases, he then later discovers that, oh, by the way, he had a son, even though he thought he didn't. Or, oh, by the way, your wife was pregnant, even though he thought she wasn't. So, so then his gift is not going to be a gift, meaning it's going to go to his long-lost son, or it's going to go to his son-to-be. So, Lema Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh Yehivalo Rabban. So the Gemara now suggests that, oh, so you know what this is? This is Umdana. It's mind-reading. So the Gemara says, no, it's not mind-reading. Afilu Tamer Rabbanan, Domishani. The Gemara says, it's not mind-reading. Just listen to what the man said. He said, I thought I had a son, but now that I don't, it's going to go to so-and-so. The man is basically telegraphing to us, and it's not even telegraph. It's like clear communication. I'm only giving it to this person because I didn't think I had a son. Which now, you don't have to be anything. You don't have to be a detective. You just listen carefully, and you know that he's saying that if he had a son, he wants it to go to his son. So this is not umdana. This is not soul-searching over here. It's not mind-reading. I'm listening to what he's saying, and therefore, I know that he really primarily wants it to go to his son. And the Gemara says, and you know what? This is the point we just made was so obvious. Udikari le mai ka'arila. The Gemara's expression, when the Gemara basically says, you knew that answer was coming. And what were you thinking? So the Gemara says, ma'u detei matzari hu deka matker. So the Gemara says, I might have thought that, yeah, look, I know he brought up his son, and I know it sounds like he's bringing him up because he's saying, I wanted to go to my son, but maybe he's just reminiscing over some past tragedies that he had in life. But he wasn't really saying that he wanted to go to his son. It doesn't sound like a strong havamina, but okay. The Gemara is saying maybe that's what I thought. Kamash Malan, the Gemara says, but the Chiddush, of course, is that when he mentions his son, saying I wish I had a son, or you know, I don't know where my son went, but being that now the case is I don't know where he is, it's going to go to so and so. Clearly, he's telegraphing to us that he primarily wants his son to be the recipient. Okay. This is the Gemara Darka Bekodesh. This is how the Gemara operates. We spend a little bit of time talking about some of the details of Matna Shchemira, and then the Gemara takes a step back, and then the Gemara then takes a global view of what is this? Meaning, where is this coming from? Where is this halacha coming from? Is it a halacha in the Torah? Is it a halacha in the Rabbanan? Like, where is this coming from? So, Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, Minayin Laman Shchemira Shehim in the Torah. So the Gemara now is going to cite opinions that states that Shchemira is min Torah. This is a Torah concept. What's a Torah concept? The idea that you're kone b'dibor. Look at the Rashbam over here. Minayin Laman Shchemira Shekone b'dibor. That the kinyan is created through just verbal designation. Below kinyan sudar, and you don't need a formal kinyan. So either mitzava machmas misa, a person's instructing because he's dying, and again, that means that he's actually stating, this I'm gifting because I'm dying, you don't need a kinyan siddur, or shchimera, where the person is assigning all of his assets away, and again, with no specification that he's doing so because he's dying, but it's clear from the context that he's dying. So under these circumstances, dibur ba'alma, just a verbal designation is all you need. And normally in the world of transaction, that's not enough. You need a kinyan, of course. Nevertheless, over here, you can do without a kinyan. Where does this come from in the Torah? The Gemara is going to give four different sources. One, Shinema, the Gemara's first source is Vavarta Masnachla Solibito. You will pass it over to your daughter. Remember, this is now going back to Parshas Pinchas. This is the source in the Torah of Nachla. We discussed these psukim extensively in the 8th parak of Baba Basra. And the Gemara Darshan's over here, Yishlachava, Racher Shi Kazu. You have another way in which property is passing over to somebody else, and that is Vezezuzu Manash Chimera. So Manash Chimera is basically like Yerusha, but of course he's designating who the recipient is going to be. But nevertheless, it's a Chimera, which means that it's going to happen at his death. It's kind of like Yerusha. Rav Nachman Amar Rav Abba Rav Omeyachon Asat Masnachlas Olachiv, and he learns it out from the same place in the Torah, just a different pasuk, and you're going to give it to your brother. So there's another gifting that's similar to that where the assets are going to be passed over to the brother. In other words, it goes to the brother when there is no son, no daughter, no parent. So then it goes over to his brother, his paternal brother. So the Gemara says that there's another gifting, and that is Manash Chimera. Rav Nachman, my time alo amara meva avartem. Now again, the Gemara is going to do its basic accounting. How come Rav Nachman didn't like the pasuk of Rav, and how come Rav didn't like the pasuk of Rav Nachman? So the Gemara now goes through each one's opinion. Rav Nachman, my time alamar me'avah avartam homi ba'ilah lechad Rabbi Detanya Rabbi Omer Bekulan Nemru behem Nesina v'kan Nemru ha'avara. By any other time that we talk about a state going passing from one to another, the Torah uses the word Nesina. But when describing the estate going to the daughter, the term of the Torah is ha'avara. It passes over. Why? Ein lechashamav v'nachlu mishev l'shevet alabas. Because through Yerusha Sabbat, the estate land can go from one sheva to another, because what's going to happen is that if there's only a dora, so then the land is going to go to the dora. She's going to marry a guy from another sheva. She's allowed to. Remember, the prohibition of tribal intermarriage is only for generation number one. After that point in time, there's no longer an iser. She'll marry a man from another sheva. She'll die, and then her estate, which she inherited from her father, now is going to go to her husband and her son, who belong to another sheva. Oh, but not Bala Yoshinosa. So Rabbi Zera, my time alo amar, miven unasatem. So why didn't Rabbi Zera who quoted Rav, so why didn't he learn it out from the word Nasatem or Chedekrahu? No, because that's not a drasha. That's just simply the way the Torah is talking, and that's not open for a drasha. Number three, the third source in the Torah. Rav Menashe bar Yirmiya amar mehacha, v'yamim ahim chala chizkeo lamos, v'yavo elav. Yishaya ben Amoz Navi v'yamar elav k'amar Hashem tzav leveischa ki meis ata v'lo sichya. So Yishayahu the Navi goes over to Chizkiyahu the king and says, you know, you're going to die. It's unfortunate news, but you are going to die. And the reason why, you look at the Pesukim over there, is because Chizkiyahu refused to have children. Chizkiyahu refused to have children because he heard through Nevuah that his child is going to be a Rasha, which parenthetically that's what happened. But nevertheless, he knew that, so therefore he refused to have children. And the Navi says to him, what your child is going to become is not a, that's not a you issue. That's your child's issue. You have a mitzvah peruvu, you have to have children. He davened to Kadosh Baruch Hu, he got an extension of 15 years, he had a child, v'chule. Anyway, what we want right now is just simply the words in the pasuk, when the Navi says, now you're going to die, tzav leveischa. You will command your house. So all you need to do is just simply give a command, and that's going to be enough. Meaning the idea, once again, of mana shchemira. Fourth source in Tanakh, Rami bar Cheska, Rami Acha, v'Achitofel ra'a ki lo nesasa atzaso. Achitofel was advising Avshalom during the rebellion. However, he gave advice which Avshalom did not listen to, and Achitofel basically knew that that was going to be a death sentence for him, for Achitofel. And so what did he do? And so what he did is, he went back to his house, he commanded, that's what we want right now. In other words, he just gave verbal commandment in terms of what's to be done with his estate, and then vayichanek, and he choked himself, he killed himself.
Are you considering a question about suicide as a shechivah?
Right, the answer,
why?
Yes, that's basically, that's understood. So, but tzava ba'alma, so the Gemara says it was the tzava ba'alma. Once again, this idea that he was just commanding. Tana Rabbana, as long as we brought up Achitofel, the Gemara just takes the opportunity to make mention of the following. Three things Achitofel commanded his sons. Number one, Altiyuba Machlokas, don't get involved in dispute. Understood, based on what Achitofel went through and what caused his own demise. Two, Altimer Duba Machus Beis David, don't rebel against the king, against the Machus Beis David. Again, kind of self-evident based on his own life experience. And finally, number three, Yom Tov Shel Atzeres Barur Zaruchiti. That if the last day of Atzeres is a clear day, so Zaruchitim, you know that the season is going to be good for planting wheat. Okay. I know the third piece of advice is really seems to be a non sequitur, based on the following pieces of advice. Now, parenthetically over here, Yom Tov Shalat Seres, the Rashbam says, is not Shmini Atzeres, but rather Shavuos. So the we're looking at Shavuos as being the simon, it's not the best translation, but like an omen, a sign. Right, pretender, that this is going to be a good season for wheat. And as long as the Gemara is here, we are now going to basically launch into a little bit of a segue now, a little bit of a tangent regarding what is good agriculturally as a good sign versus a bad sign. And so let's go. The Gemara, we'll spend just a couple minutes over here. So The third piece of advice that Achitofel gave, and again, we talked about Achitofel. Just all you have to do is follow the bouncing ball. We talked about Achitofel because he seemingly is giving commandment in terms of what to do with this estate, which is the Gemara's fourth source in terms of where do we see this idea of Matna Shchimera in the Torah and Tanakh. So now, as long as we are on the third piece of advice of Achitofel, the Gemara now is going to launch into a small discussion regarding what is a good omen, what's not a good omen. Marzutra Amar Balulat. Marzutra says, no, you're not looking for a clear day on Shavuos, you're looking for a cloudy day. No, not clear, not cloudy. Ella afilu balul, even if it's cloudy. But you have the northern wind is going to mean that it's going to portend for a good year for wheat. Amale Rabbi Abba Rav Ashi Ananad Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi Mastisanlam Dam Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi Motze Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag. Now we're talking about Shemini Atzeres, the last day of Chag. Chag by itself is always a reference to Sukkos. So we are now on Motze Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, on the night after the last day of Yom Tov. So we are on Motzei Shemini Atzeres. Now let's put ourselves in Eretz Yisrael. There's no Simchas Torah. That's the second day of Yom Tov. Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. So we are now on the eve of the ninth day of Yom Tov, which means post Yom Tov. And Hakol Sofen LaAshana Maracha. And what everyone does now is they look towards the Ashana Maracha, the billowing smoke that comes up off the Mizbeach. And basically, in other words, it's going to tell you which way the wind is blowing, literally. So not to copy Sofen Aniyim Smechum Bale Batim Atzavim. Now, if the billow of smoke now is moving north, that means that there's a southern wind. And so therefore the poor people are going to be happy and the Baal Batim are going to be sad. Because we know it's going to be a very rainy year. Uperis Markivim, and therefore the fruit are going to rot. Too much humidity, too much moisture in the air. Mind you, by the way, the Rashman points out that the last day of Chag of Sukkos is the day to look towards the wind blowing and what kind of season we're going to have in terms of rain. Because remember, over Sukkos, what do? We do Nisuch HaMayim, and we know that Sukkos is Rosh Hashanah LaMayim, meaning we know that water is established. The amount of water and precipitation we're going to have over the course of the year is established, is judged on Sukkos. So therefore, we look towards the Mizbeach in terms of telling us, forecasting for us how the year is going to be. Not to copy Daramaniyam Atzavim Vale Batam Smechim. Now, if it goes towards the south, the poor people are going to be happy, the poor people are going to be sad, the wealthy people are going to be happy. Because the rain of the year is going to be little. However, those who have storage houses of fruit over here probably meaning like wheat, but those who have storage houses, so their storage houses are going to be filled. If it heads towards the east, everyone's going to be happy, and if it heads towards the west, it's going to be sad. So, what it seems like now is that if the billow of smoke is headed towards the east, that means that you have a western wind pushing it, and it sounds like that's going to make everyone happy. And it sounds like in the other direction, where the billowing smoke is going towards the west, which means that you have an eastern wind, so everyone's going to be sad. And the Gemara says, now as far as the winds are concerned, so the wind blowing forecast seems to indicate the exact opposite in the next brisa. And the next brisa reads, eastern wind, good. Western wind, bad. Ruach tzafon is yafel lechita b'sha she'viu shlish v'kash lezeisim b'sha she'yanitzo. A northern wind, good for the wheat that already has gone through a third of its development, bad for the olives that started already ripening on the tree. Ruach drom is kash lechita b'sha she'viu shlish v'yafel lezeisim b'sha she'yanitzo. The southern wind, bad for the wheat and good for the olives. Now, and you want a great mnemonic just to help you remember what about the northern wind, the southern wind? Think of the Beis Hamikdash. And now we're in the Heichal, we're actually in the building, and we know that the table, the Shulchan's on the north side, and we know that the menorah is on the south side. Right, and we know that what goes on the Shulchan, of course, is the Lechem upon him, which is made up of wheat. We know that what's burned in the menorah is the olive oil. So, you know now that the northern wind, meaning the Shulchan's up in the northern wind is good for the wheat, bad for the olive oil. The southern wind is good for the olives and bad for the wheat. Anyway, just a mnemonic. So, hi Marbi Dideva, hi Marbi Dideva. And the Gemara just simply says, yeah, what I just said. So, anyway, eastern wind, good or bad? Brises are conflicting with one another. Lokasha, halan v'aluhu. The Gemara says, not a problem. And one's describing Eretz Yisrael and the other is describing Bavel. In Bavel, says the Rashbam, so they are living in low lands. And it's extraordinarily fertile. The Rashbam writes, we don't need rain. So therefore, for us in Bavel, the west wind is bad because it's going to bring about rain which we don't need, and therefore oversaturated. But for the east wind, that's good for us because we don't need that much rain. And then the first brisa, that's talking about people living in Eretz Yisrael. When you're living in the elevated mountains of Eretz Yisrael, so you need a lot of rain. So that is the difference between one brisa and another brisa. One brisa is describing Bavel, and the other brisa is describing Eretz Yisrael. Tanya, we are three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Abashalom Yom Tov Shalateres Barur Siman Yafel Lechol Hashana Kula. That if the last day of Yom Tov is clear, so that is a good forecast for the entire year. Amar Ezved Hayuma Kama Dere Shasa Ichamim, the first day of the year, what we would refer to as Rosh Hashanah. If it's a hot one, Kulu Shasa Chamima, that means the entire year is going to be hot. Ikarir Kulu Shasa Karira. Okay, so you don't need the farmer's almanac, all you need is today's daf, and we are good. Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara says now, what difference does it make meaning? So what good is this information for us? So, I guess this year's wardrobe would be one answer. The Gemara gives a better answer. The tefillah also shall Kohen Gadol, it's going to be good in terms of the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol. So that when the Kohen Gadol goes in 10 days later into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he will make a very short tefillah upon his emergence, the Gemara in Yuma describes that. So, he already knows that it's going to be a hot year. There's nothing he can do to change that, but he can ask for a little bit of relief. Or if he knows it's going to be a cold year. So again, he can't change it, but he can ask for a little bit of relief from the cold. Okay. Rav Amar, Rav Nachman. So where do we see on Amud Aleph of today? Four different places in Tanakh that we have this idea of Matna Shchimira. Now, Rava says in the name of Rav Nachman, Matna Shchimira Midrabanan hi Shemeti Tarif Daito Alav. No, this is a rabbinic institution. Meaning this is not a din d'oraisa, but rather the rabbis instituted this idea of matna shchimira. And the reason why they did is basically to create peace of mind for the person who's dying. A person who's dying, if he were to know, I'm saying over the Rashbam's second pshat, the one that he prefers. If he were to know that he were to give verbal instruction, but it's not going to be listened because it's not legally valid, so titarev daito, it's going to make him even more anxiety ridden, and it will bring his demise even quicker. So to provide a little bit of relief and comfort, and to take away some of the stress of the person who's dying, so therefore the rabbis legislated that his instruction is all you need in order to create legal realities. It's a rabbinic institution. Umi amar Rav Nachman achi, v'amar Rav Nachman afagav damar shmol amoch ishtar chov lechaver v'chazar machlo machov v'afilu yorish mochel. So the Gemara says, you know, when you sell a note, so you, the seller of the note, can still forgive the note. We've gone over this halacha, I can't say how many times, I will say a lot. And the side of the Gemara, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Ksuvos, Kedushin, we've gone over this halacha so many times throughout Shas, and it's good, and keep going over it. And the halacha is that when you sell a note to somebody, so, right, buying paper is business, right, factoring, people buy paper at a discount. So as per the halacha's concern, so the original note holder can still forgive the loan after he sold it. Now we would put that under the category of what I would call not nice. And I'm being kind in saying not nice. It's really unkind selling a note to somebody and then forgiving the loan. But you have the right to do so. Why you have the right to do so? So the the why you have the right to do so. So there's many different ways to say it. The traditional way to say it is what Rabbeinu Tam says, is because when you have a note, when you are a note holder, the original note holder, so you have two shibudim. You have two, basically, you have two liens. One is a shibud aguf and the other is a shibud nechasim. Meaning that he owes you the money and shibud nechasim, and you have a lien against his property. When you sell the note to somebody else, you're selling the shibud nechasim, but you're not selling the shibud aguf. Meaning you still have a personal encumbrance on that obligation, and so therefore you still own the debt, so to say. Even after you sell the note, you still are a partial owner of the debt, and therefore it gives you the right to forgive it. And not only do you own the debt, the idea is really, it's mind-blowing, is that when you die, so that debt is passed down to your child. Your child now owns the debt as well, and if he wants to, he can forgive the loan. Okay, so it's really a wild concept. But anyway, but that's the halacha. Hamocher shechov lechaver v'chazer machlo. Machlova afilu yorish machlo, and even the yorish can forgive. So mo deshmul, shim nasa me matan shchimer adeno chola machlo. But, however, even Shmuel is going to agree that if I were to transfer the note using the mechanism of shchimera, so then it's going to be a full transfer to the point where no longer can the heir forgive the note. So now, I ask you the question, this idea of mana shchimera, is it a daraisa or a darabanan? If it's daraisa, so then you understand that when I sell a note, I can still forgive it. But if I use shchimera, the operative form, the mechanical form of shchimera, to gift it over to somebody else, that's different. It's fundamentally different, and therefore the original note holder can no longer forgive it. So Iyamar Pishlama Daraisa Mishum Hachi Eno Yacholim Chol. Ela Iyamar Darabanan He Amai Eno Yacholim Chol. So the Gemara says, if we want with our first position today that Manash Gemara is a Din Daraisa, so then I understand that it's qualitatively different to Shchiv Meira a note to somebody else rather than to just simply sell it to somebody else. However, if you hold that Manas Chimera is a rabbinic institution, how can it be any better than a regular sale? And if in a regular sale, the original note holder still has the right and the ability to forgive the loan, so should a Matnash Chimera, if Matnash Chimera is just a Dinder Rabbanan. The Gemara's answer, Eina Shel Torah V'Asu K'Shel Torah. So the Gemara's answer is, look, no, we could still maintain that it's rabbinic legislation, but we can also still maintain that incorporated and coded into the rabbinic legislation is that we're going to treat this as if this was a dinda araisa. The Chachamim have that kind of ability, especially when it comes to money. We have the principle of Hefker based in Hefker. And so when they legislate Matna Shchimera, they could do so with the kind of force as if it's a totally, it's a more powerful type of gifting. And in the case of, let's say, a note, if the Shchiv Meira were to be gifting the note using the mechanism of Shchiv Meira to somebody else, it would be such a complete and valid transaction that he no longer has the ability to forgive. His children have no longer the ability to forgive, meaning it's totally cut off, the note is totally cut off from the original note holder, as opposed to a regular note that's just being sold, where the original note holder is still a partial owner on that debt. Okay. I kind of will stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up on Merava, right there towards the bottom of the Amud. Okay, so just a quick recap. We introduced ourselves to the concept of Shchiv Meira, the idea that he's gifting away his assets because he's dying, with the condition that is tacit, but nevertheless is there, that if he doesn't die and he makes a miraculous recovery, it's all going to go back to him. The question of umdana, this idea of circumstantial evidence determining, dictating what the halacha is going to be. Two Amoraim brought in two Tanaim who subscribed to this. We talked then today about the source of Shchiv Meira. Four different sources in Tanakh, four possible sources in Tanakh where Shchiv Meira came from. We had a little bit of a tangent today regarding Achitofel and the advice he gave to his children before he committed suicide. The Gemara then, we got a little more wind talk for today and forecasting for the year. And then the Gemara brought in the other opinion, which is that of Rav Nachman, that the mechanism of Shchiv Meira is not Din D'Oraisa, but rather it's a Din D'Rabbanan. The psukim that we quoted were just a smachta ba'alma, but they're not really sources. This is a rabbinic legislation done to relieve some of the mental strain and stress of somebody who's dying. And then the Gemara points out that even though that's true, still the Chachamim gave this Matnas Chimera more force, more halachic oomph than a regular transaction, a regular mecher.